Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you are listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. Also pollen-filled, too, as you will probably hear throughout this
game. I'm hearing it right now.
It's allergy season, folks.
I am, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Analfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, Teresa Sammons, and Dan Rev Victorio.
Good evening.
Hey, hello, everyone.
Hello,
everyone. Packed house this week. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I always say as always, because the lineup's always shifting.
As is sometimes the case, maybe? I don't know.
There are a few constants, but not many.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we say, you know, as always, it's kind of with quote marks around it.
Yeah. It's like, anyway, as always, just to the fact that there are people here.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for April 1st, 2017, first show of the month. And first and foremost, as we said last year when we started, if you're expecting any kind of April Fool's stuff, well, you can just piss off.
Yeah,
we're above that here.
We're not doing that here.
We got plenty of stupid shit that's real.
Yes.
I hate that freaking tradition. I want to find out who it is that came up with that tradition, go back in time, and just punch him right in the dick. Just.
I was going to say throat, but that works too.
Over and over and over again until it turns into a vagina. Just.
Okay.
That's how much I hate that stupid.
I think you need some kind of motorized equipment for that, but
I will make it. I mean, I've got time travel technology already. I'm pretty sure I can come up with something else.
I fully support you in this endeavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yes, spring has basically sprung now, and we're sort of going through this weird thing of where, oh my God, it's sunny, and oh my God, all the pollen, and then, wow, rain, and just through all of them, basically.
Yeah. We had a snowstorm yesterday.
Yeah, well, that's Canada. I mean, God abandoned that place a long time ago. So, hey, you got us back. You managed to burn down our White House that one time.
Well, yeah, I suppose. Anyways.
But, obviously, as you'll hear, a lot of us are going to be sniffling through this because, like a lot of people, we got terrible hay fever right around springtime, and it's especially bad down here where suddenly the pollen is just, there's just a nice little layer of green all over everything.
Including your eyes.
Yes, and your tongue and the back of your throat, inside of your nose, your hands. That stuff just gets everywhere, and really hard to get rid of it once it gets in you. For this episode, of course, we're going to have our usual stuff. We're going to have some U.S. hockey news, some Olympics news. We're going to have a roundup of some new trailers for films that are coming up. And we're going to continue our Gamer Mag remembrances of Game Bro number 109. Yes. All that and more, including some stuff that'll probably make you want to hang yourself right now on Let's Weekend. So, start things off.
The most uplifting show on the internet.
Yes. Your faith in humanity will go down just slightly one more notch. But anyways, to start us off, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm always doing the audiobook thing. So right now I'm listening to Kill Decision by Daniel Suarez.
Mm-hmm.
Because drones, and yeah. It's an interesting book. Some very strange characters in this one.
By the way, you bring up drones. Just a small little side note. There's legislators in Connecticut right now, Republican legislatures, that are trying to make it legal to attach guns to drones.
Yeah, that seems like a really bad idea. Also seems like it would probably be impossible to hit anything with them, because physics.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop someone from trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And people will get hurt, maybe killed by it, but...
Yeah. We just don't know.
Like most things Second Amendment related, not the way it was intended.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going through that. I'm enjoying, you know, my time with Odin and his two birds, because that's a thing, apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I did that. Also finished up Mr. Robot Season 2. I'd taken a break from it for a while for a little bit and tried to figure out why. But yeah, mm-hmm. I went through that, finished that, and holy crap, that season ended weird.
Mm.
It's like, you think you know how messed up Elliot's mind is? I don't know. Nope. Not until you get to the end of that season do you figure out how just incredibly devious he is. So, yeah, been doing that, and I've pretty much been doing that on my Roku, because I picked up a Roku stick. Yeah, I kind of enjoying that thing. Picked one up for my mom and figured, well, I might as well get one for myself, so been playing around with that. I got Plex on there, Netflix, YouTube, a bunch of some private stuff, like Filmon that's on there. It's a decent little streaming box, honestly. It's dead silent because there's no fans or anything in it, and it works.
I enjoy the Roku.
Yeah, it works. It's quite nice.
You have the box or the USB stick?
The stick.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured, yeah, why the heck not? It was on sale, so it's like, well, all right. Pick that one up.
Make some use of that USB slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's powered by USB, and it's like HDMI on one end and a USB on the other. It's like, okay. Unfortunately, I figured out that my TV's USB port doesn't put out enough amperage to power it, so that's a bit of an issue. But at least it came with a USB adapter that I can use to power it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a decent little box for $40. Can't really complain too much. So, that's pretty much been it for me. How about you, Pat?
Still writing, still working on some YouTube videos, game reviews. Unfortunately, every time I get close to a finished version of a review, a game gets patched that causes me to make edits, and that's kind of the dance I've been doing for the last few days, but I'm still thoroughly enjoying Old Time Hockey and Super Bomberman R, and expect to hear from me shortly on these with a hopefully last word, because...
Until they update it again.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they put out an update this morning.
God, yeah, they did. 1.07.
Yeah. I think this one has bug fixes, though, so...
Actually, 1.07 was last night. I don't think there was another one this morning. I don't know. I was just greeted with it when I got home from work. But yeah, that's kind of been putting everything else on hold. But hopefully I'll be finishing those up shortly so I can start looking ahead to the next stuff I'll be writing about.
Yeah.
So that's really been it for me.
All right, what about you, Teresa?
I have been completely and utterly engrossed in a game. I eat, sleep, and drink it for the past 3 days now. It's Kingdom, the indie game that came out on Steam a few years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago. And it's a side-scroller, kind of a strategy resource management game. And I was playing Zelda.
And then you weren't.
Now I'm not. So it's really, really fun. Maybe might be playing it right now. Maybe just a little bit.
Just a bit.
But also Zelda Breath of the Wild. I have been playing that. And
how far are you?
I only played for 4 days. I had to stop because I wrecked my wrists. And
again?
Yes, it was horrible. You know, I swear. One of these days I'm going to get bionic wrists. That'd be great. I was about 14 shrines in, what was I doing next? I had already gone up to the lab. I had already captured or reclaimed some memories. I don't remember remember where I was.
It was before that's usually a good thing.
Yeah, it was. I've had a trip since then, so that also put a little damper on things too. And then this afternoon, I started Slapshots. Haven't finished it.
What do you think?
Interesting setup so far. I'm about at the point where they've announced that the steel mill is going to close, and I don't understand what's going on with his wife. Are they still together? Are they divorced? What is going on here? So I'll be figuring that one out. But other than that, and a shit ton of driving to Kentucky and back, that's really about it this week.
All right. So with that, what about you, Chris?
Well, I watched Netflix Live, which is their April Fool's joke, which involves Will Arnett watching supposedly live feeds of various parts of the Netflix office and sort of offering commentary on them, which is a lot funnier than it actually sounds like. Because all these are pre-recorded feeds. There's one that takes place at nighttime, just a view of like a field at night. And there's just some really funny parts. It starts off where he's just taking it seriously. He's like doing commentary on a burrito in a microwave. and eventually gets to the point where he's watching a guy that's sharpening a bunch of pencils and critiquing his form. Until he gets to a woman that's browsing on a computer playing Minesweeper and then starts Google searching how to download Netflix movies. Then sending an email to one of the other employees asking how to download them. To a guy on the trying to park a car, parallel park on the sidewalk and just getting pissed with him and just it's hilarious.
Will Arnett can pretty much make anything funny. So
yeah. He's just yelling at the guy, and then he does a half-assed job, gets out, and leaves. Like, what the hell are you doing, Steve?
First try.
It's a good thing to watch while you got something else you're doing, and just check over when it seems like he's talking about something interesting.
Yeah.
It's just funny. It's I don't know if they're gonna continue doing something like that or if it's just going to keep it as the one-off thing, but it's funnier than it really has any right to be. I also watched Iron Fist, which is not funny.
It's not that good, apparently.
It's okay. I watched the first two episodes and watched the main character, Danny Rand, try to figure out a way to get out of the mental hospital he was in. And that's eventually he gets out, and that's where it kind of picks up a little bit. But before that, it's not really all the interesting. He gets back from his stay in the Himalayas or the monk monastery where he was at.
Thing it's like in Tibet or Nepal, something like that.
Well, the plane crashes in the Himalayas. But the actual place he goes to is technically in another dimension. And so he gets back, meets up with his formerly childhood friends who believe he's actually dead and thinks he's just a crazy homeless guy because he has a big bushy beard and all that. Yeah, it's okay. I might watch a little bit more, but it's not grabbing me like Daredevil did, especially. And the fight choreography is not that great. It just doesn't feel like he necessarily had much, either much time to practice or they just didn't have very good choreography. Because a lot of it is just him like throwing guys around. Not much hitting. Yeah, it's okay. The other thing I've been doing a lot this week is listening to Stephen Lynch's Line album, which is one he released a few years ago. It's a double-sided album, I guess. The first half is all studio tracks, and the second half is sort of the live performance of those tracks.
Hmm.
Which, with this album, he's tried a lot more to evolve the musical aspect of the album. So it's not just simple chords, but has a lot more good harmonica usage and piano and banjo and other instruments. Mm-hmm. Sounds a bit more of a southern, southern or southern rock or country aspect to it, but that just is a nice contrast to the lyrics that he goes with it, where he's got songs about being a vegan and then being pissed by people that eat meat around him and then just decides to start eating meat. Again, sort of talking about how he'd blow a goat for some bacon.
Wow.
Yeah, and he there's a lot of really good stuff on that album. And yeah, it's... I've been looking at some of the other YouTube performances he's had on various radio shows and such. XM Radio has a good nice video of him playing with Courtney J, who's sort of his duet partner on the most of the album.
Mm-hmm.
And they do some great stuff, like a song about the two of them sleeping together to a song, and he thinks it's a Phil Collins song. Eventually finds out it's a Peter Gabriel song, and she starts yelling at him, "Who the hell confuses Peter Gabriel with Phil Collins?" And it's a great bit of combat between them, sort of trying to figure out this song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. And as for games, I've been playing MLB The Show 17, which is another potentially infinite long game. Add to the list. And that game's fantastic.
I still need to pick it up.
Mm.
It's a game that continues to innovate that nobody else gives a shit about in the industry, in the sports industry, because they still have the year-to-year saves that I don't believe anybody else does. Mm. They did a big kind of overhaul to their career mode, Road to the Show, which adds dialogue choices, kind of RPG-esque. But its presentation is not flashy like NBA 2K's or FIFA's, where it's more of a documentary in a sense, kind of generic about, you know, player going, trying to get into the show, starting with the initial, like, doing tryouts for potentially going into the draft, saying whether he's going to go to college or go into the draft. That sort of stuff. And you get to make choices where you can just be a sarcastic jerk, see how that goes, or be the humble, nice guy. Or with my closer that I started up, eventually we had an injury on the rotation. I got drafted by the White Sox organization, so I was in their AA team. And they eventually asked me to try out for the rotation to fill in a slot that opened up due to injury. And that's where my guy's at now. Which initially that's tough because my stamina is not anywhere close to letting me go that far, but I've been able to tough it out. Mm. Go 6 or 7 innings just on pure speed because I have about a 99-100 mile an hour fastball. Cause that's where I've been able to put all my points into. But yeah, it's been really good so far. The retro mode is neat. I think people will be disappointed about that because it's just a exhibition mode. But if people like it enough, they could probably pressure the developers to put that as an option in maybe the career or the franchise mode. There's like a weird 8-bit filter on that. Makes it like the Diablo stuff in Diablo 3 that Phil would know about, where it just sort of blurs the good graphics. I immediately turn that back
off.
It
doesn't really look like sprite work, but...
No, it's just like, you just like turn down the resolution on this. I just like the high-res graphics and mostly animations with the ability to just slide them around the batter or the pitcher on the mound and all that. And, yeah, that's been pretty good. And also been playing more Zelda, trying to do more shrines to build up my stamina, trying to get at least the second circle full before I start doing hearts. Because so far hearts have not been that big of a deal. So if I'm going to die, I'm going to die. You don't really lose that much progress. So it's been fine. Also been playing more Trails of Cold Steel, which nice. I am in. I just finished the third field study where things start hitting off. And start seeing that there's, surprise, surprise, a shady underground group that is trying to destabilize these two countries, get them to fight.
Mm-hmm.
That sure sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, it sounds like my time with Trails in the Sky. Mm-hmm. Where there's an underground group trying to destabilize the, the kingdom.
And, yeah, spoiler alert, by the way, they succeed.
Okay. So far,
it's JRPG and politics for you.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the sort of off time doing some stuff there. And I picked up the second Trails of Cold Steel since it's on sale
right
now.
Get ready.
I just need them
one
to put
of us. One of us. One of us.
Gobble, 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 gobble.
I just need them to put Trails in the Sky SC on sale, and I will have all of them so far.
I mean, most of them have two copies each, so...
Yeah. I'm just waiting for that stuff to go on sale on PSN so I don't have to mess with any discs or cards or whatever. Yeah, that's been mostly it. I've been trying to do something stupid with WWE 2K16. That is trying to apply wrestling to politics in a way. The problem nice. Is their creation stuff in there is bad compared to last gen, where you could set up actual like scenes and such. So now I have to think of an alternate way of accomplishing my goals. But thanks to Rusev being the Russian on the roster, that makes it a lot easier to do what I want to do with Trump. Yeah, I am looking forward to hopefully finishing it up sometime over the next week, and hopefully having a video up on the just on my Twitter account, because I want to shit post with a stupid wrestling video.
There
so that's been pretty much it. How about you, Dan Rip?
Yeah, for me, it's been a whole lot of work. Over at our studio, we actually just released our annual baseball game. It's MLB Tap Sports Baseball 2017, which is now the number one free app in the App Store. And we've never done that before, so yeah, money. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because of that, like, you know, for me, I'm the kind of person where if I'm going to spend this much time at work, I want to spend, you know, this much time just doing me, you know. So I've been going to sleep a lot at 2-3 a.m. Just so I can catch up on whatever I want to catch up on, whether it's TV, like right before the podcast, before my trip to the bathroom, I was watching Supergirl, The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow, because the DC universe on the CW is killing it right now. Some of the seasons aren't as strong as in previous years, but the fact that they all cross over is pretty damn impressive, and they're actually really well written, and it's weird seeing how successful these are but how bad the movies are. It's mm-hmm. really a dumb thing. Also got caught up with 24 Legacy, which is the pseudo sequel to the 24 series, and it's still good. Then again, they also have Kiefer Sutherland as a executive director, so I don't think Fox would pay for it if it was gonna be bad. So it's quite a solid show there. So that's what I've been watching. I do still have to start Iron Fist, but I can't do that until I finish, what's it called? What's the third defender's name again? Luke Cage. There you go. Yeah. So, still got to finish that. I've actually been dreading watching the Justice League trailer, because I know that DC can make good trailers, but the movies are just not where we want them to be. So I'll just wait for the movie to come out, watch there, and form my opinion there. Same with Spider-Man. So, I mean, right now we're seeing a huge, like, comic takeover with the movies. So we just I just want to take a step by step for now. Gaming wise, as I've been saying, I've been playing until like 2 a.m. 3 a.m. every day. A few weeks ago on one of our shows, I complained about Horizon's side quests being not all that interesting. And while I said that, I also got into Zelda right after. So when you go from one game to the other, despite how similar the PS4 and Switch controllers feel, the button layouts are all fucked up, and you can't change it for any of these games. So it's a matter of relearning the games if you're going to go back and forth between the two. So I totally do not recommend that. But yeah, Horizon was great. I actually ended up platinuming it. And yeah, it's a testament to, you know, these huge studios that only work on one game. And it shows that, you know, they can handle another project. You know, Guerrilla is so used to doing Killzone, it's good that they had an opportunity to make Horizon, and Horizon ended up selling well. So we'll undoubtedly see a series there, and hopefully we see studios that normally handle one project do something else. It's really important to branch out, you know, especially with what EA does. You put so much money into one studio, and then, I mean, I'm not going to say Mass Effect bombed yet, but I don't think the overall opinion of all the experts and whatnot really bodes well for BioWare at the moment. Actually, being in the industry has showed that a lot of these bigger developers and publishers are really cutthroat, you know? There's a reason why they're always going for these AAA games, and they probably should be making B titles, which is why you see a lot of developers move into the indie circuit. So, not surprising at all. But yeah, aside from the Zelda and the Horizon, which I believe I'm done with both, I'm also playing... What do I have on my list here? I have to take a look. Has-Been Heroes. I have the review for that due. And so far, I'm not liking it all that much. I do like the art style. But what bogs it down for me is the controls. Because it's not one of your... when you look at it, it looks like a side-scroller, but it's more of a slot fighter where... You have people in their own lanes, and then you have to use the left and right shoulder buttons to move left and right and shoot people and switch people. And it gets overly complicated, and so far I'm not really liking it that much. I also finished the third chapter of The Walking Dead Season 3, which was extremely solid. I have the review for that soon. And I'm also playing Persona 5. As much as I want to talk about it, when Chris gave me all of the embargo information, it was like... too long to read, and long story short, I just don't think I'm allowed to talk about it yet. So
I'm under one of those two with the GT Sport Online beta, so I completely understand.
Oh yeah, so
some of the language in there is really North Korean.
But yeah, I'm about 5 hours in. I just got to the point where the game opens up. I mean, if you've played a Persona before, you already know that, you know, you're in a school setting, and it gets pretty linear until you reach a certain point where they trust you enough to do whatever you want. So I'm going through day-to-day activities now. And my main complaint is something that we can't change. Persona 4 Golden and the Switch have spoiled me to the fact that I want all my games to be portable now. So, yeah, I'm actually playing Persona 5, which is really uncomfortable because I'm in my room in sweltering heat, and I'd rather be downstairs playing it handheld, but I can't because it's not a Vita game or a Switch game. Thanks, Atlas. But yeah.
Well, you can always remote play that shit.
It's true, but I don't want the latency issues. But, yeah. So, that's largely been me.
Alright, well, it's my turn. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Alright, well... first and foremost, I have been playing Mass Effect Andromeda, and I think it's great.
All right.
I mean, yeah.
5 out of 5, game of the year.
It's probably going to be like a 4 out of 5 at the end, but yes, I think it's great. I love it. Loving the hell out of it. kind of pissed off at a lot of the critics. Because
yeah.
I think a lot of them kind of got sucked into I don't want to call it hate hype. But,
it's not a very positive atmosphere that's going on right now.
Yeah. No. And I think this game has been a victim of it.
Yeah.
I think it has been unjustly so. Not that I'm denying the fact that some of the stuff is unpolished. But other than the unpolished, everything else is fantastic.
I mean, aside from the I guess lack of polish, or the fact that a lot of the critics are complaining about things that have always been prevalent in the series, one common thing that I've been seeing is there's various parts of the game that are broken or unplayable. Have you gone through any of that?
Nope.
Okay, just thought I'd ask.
I'm sure some of them may bring up the Nomad, which is your sort of the version of the Mako. Have not had a problem with it.
Cool.
And, you know, it's funny because I go on all the other sites, you know, Destructoid and Game Informer, and I'm seeing this shit play out in the comment sections and in the forums. Because there's a bunch of people who have completely just written the game off completely, and then there's people like me who've actually played it and are like, no, dude, it's not what you think.
Yeah.
Need to give it a chance. And I mean, it's made me realize that the modern gaming community has gotten so toxic. And honestly, I kind of blame some of the ways that games are reviewed now for it. I mean, just Metacritic is probably the worst thing that's happened to the gaming world in a long time.
I'd maybe argue YouTube shit posting videos.
Well, yeah, that's also.
Because that's a lot of what the Andromeda stuff is people.
They would pick
weird
bits and
animations and bugs.
Yeah, they pick like bits and pieces out of it and then make like little compilations of it and play it out, and
people are like, oh, it's just completely broken. What the hell?
No, it's not.
See, I'm going to be a real outlier here. I'm going to say we should have retired the practice of reviewing games back in 2007 when Jeff Gerstmann got screwed over.
Well, at least giving them numbered reviews. Because I'm starting to think that numbered reviews might kind of be bullshit.
Yeah.
They've always been bullshit. It's just people want them.
Yeah, but
they want some sort of summary.
Yeah. But anyway, the thing is, Mass Effect Andromeda, it's a fun game. Loving it so far. I love the story. I love the characters I'm meeting. I love the writing. And other than the facial expressions, the graphics are amazing. So, you know, that's my fuck you to all the
much of the community.
Yeah. So other than that, I've also, of course, been watching more.
They need
more.
The occasional fuck you, though.
Yeah, they do. Just a giant one. Every so often, just to remember. Just so they don't get so damn full of themselves. But, I've also, of course, been watching more anime. I'm still watching Future Diary. Also, I'm watching Lost Universe, which, for those of you who don't know, Lost Universe is the... who knows who Hajime Kanzaka is? He's the guy who created Slayers.
Okay.
Yeah, well, Lost Universe is another book series he wrote, and it also got an anime. So it's got sort of the goofiness of Slayers, but it's in a space opera setting.
Okay.
And it's funny. So basically, like anything Kanzaka has touched, it's like 70% comedy and 30% dead serious. So it's got its dramatic moments peppered in with the slapstick. So let's see. Yeah, other than that, a lot of folks in my neighborhood, we're getting ready to do this huge yard sale that we're going to be doing next Saturday. So we've basically, me and my family have spent the last week basically going through all our old shit and getting it ready to take over there. Finding stuff I haven't touched in since high school. And just so you know, I graduated high school in 2005. So there's shit that's been in there for over 15 years. and, you know, just all that stuff. And of course, having to deal with the dust and combining that with the pollen. Yeah, that's fun. That's a lot of fun. So yeah, we're getting all that ready. We're just about done with it. The hard stuff part, of course, is going to be once Saturday morning comes and we have to load all this shit up.
Yeah.
And take it over to where we're selling it. And other than that, yeah, we're having the cherry blossom. We were having the cherry blossom festival down here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, Macon is one of the few cities in the United States that has its own cherry blossom festival. Yeah. And, it's a big tourist thing. It happens every year. And, because the funny thing is, the cool thing about, of course, having a cherry blossom festival is you also have a sister city in Japan. And every year there's a delegate, and also Taiwan. Specifically Taipei for Macon.
Oh.
And so every year there's a delegation that comes from both countries and comes over to the U.S. Comes down here to Macon. And so I went to my parents for the church Sunday morning last Sunday, and the Japanese and the Taipei the Taiwanese delegations were both there. And the reason is because the church that my family goes to, Highland Hills Baptist Church, actually facilitated the first Cherry Blossom Festival in Macon over 40 years ago.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's a historic thing. So, like, our mayor was also there. The festival committee was there. And I got to actually talk to real-life Japanese people.
Hmm.
Konnichiwa! Watashi wa Brendan Perkins des.
But that went.
That's not what you actually say to them, right?
No.
Okay.
I actually said konnichiwa. Watashi wa Brendan Perkins des. I can actually, and of course the Taipei folks are like, ni hao.
And you're like, okay.
I'm tried.
Yeah.
Fortunately, all of them were fairly
understanding.
Well, yeah, also fairly forgiving. And they were also most of them were fairly fluent in English, so.
So that helped.
Yeah.
They're like, shut up, you idiot.
Yeah. But it was nice. It's a lot of fun. A lot of, rides and attractions and bites.
It's basically the start of the of carnival season.
Pretty much. But yeah, so that's what we were up to.
How close are you to the highway collapse?
Oh, that's in Atlanta.
Okay.
So yeah, that was I-58.
Yeah. That's closer to Lee.
Yeah. Which, by the way, has anyone heard from Lee?
He and his wife were making fun of it on Facebook, so.
I'm pretty sure he wonders how it hadn't happened sooner. But anyway, okay, so we got anything else we want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Alrighty then, well, it is once again time for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this time, for this episode, I thought we would take a little time for a part of the sort of Brandon's Random Factoid experience to weird weapons, specifically this one weapon that I recently discovered. So Just out of quick curiosity, is anybody here a gun owner?
Yeah.
Nope.
Oh. Yeah, you live in Utah, though, so.
I mean, Canada, guns are highly regulated, so.
Yeah, but you guys, weirdly enough, are also just about as well armed as we are, so. Yeah.
Just you gotta watch out for the moose.
Yeah. It's just most people don't feel like going through the paperwork.
Yeah. Plus, I don't think they'd give you one anyway.
Yeah.
No, you just got the hockey sticks. That's what you fight with.
Hmm.
Yeah. And unless you guns. Think... Unless you think that's somehow a... a... You know, a disadvantage for a Canadian. Oh, no. But anyway, so yes, I myself am a gun owner. I've got a few. And the thing about guns is... The fact that they can take all types of weird shapes and sizes, because the idea behind a gun is actually fairly simple. It's tube, gunpowder, and shit inside it that that goes off.
Shrapnel.
Yeah. It's the most basic concept out there.
Drive it through living things to help them no longer be living.
Yeah. And just the weird way that guns have been made. So, who here has ever heard of something called a belly gun?
Yeah.
Okay, for those of you who don't know what a belly gun is basically a revolver, usually like a pepper box revolver, that has had the metal around the trigger and the actual barrel sawed off down to the base.
Hmm.
The idea is that it's basically meant to be used in close range. That's why it's called a belly gun, because you come up, stick it in the dude's belly, and blam.
Hmm.
And, of course, belly guns are basically well-loved by gangsters of all types, at least, you know, in the old days. And so these types of guns have come in all types of weird forms and strange...
Oh, I can only imagine.
...ideas. Case in point, the subject of today's segment... I give to you the... Okay, so hold on. The...
Deciding what to call it?
Yeah. Well, it's got a proper name, but it's also got a proper name and, like, the street name.
Hmm.
But I can't find the proper name, so screw it. I give you the Apache Revolver.
Versatile.
Yes. So, for those of you who can't see that, in fact, you know, might as well go ahead and put that little image into the show notes. We'll go ahead and describe that to you. That is a pepper box revolver where the handle of the gun is, well, it's a set of knuckle dusters. And on the side, and of course there's no barrel because it's basically a belly gun. Then on the side is a folding dagger that you can fold in and out for any particular use. So,
just in case you gotta shove somebody.
Yeah, so in one weapon you have a pair of brass knuckles, a fairly effective shiv, and a revolver that can really ruin somebody's day.
Well, you know, Alton Brown doesn't like single-use kitchen tools.
Mm-hmm.
Can see how this would fall under the same category.
It's what you use for a real life finishing move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now here's the part you're really gonna love. Do you know where this gun comes from?
No.
It comes from France.
Okay, I wouldn't have expected
this is a French weapon. It was designed by a gentleman named Louis Donnet, who was a gun manufacturer in Europe. In the mid-1800s, he had a company called El Donnet Allige, and this is one of the weapons that he produced. He originally made it to be used for spies, you know, commandos, people who did reconnaissance in the army.
Yeah, it's pretty compact.
But, yeah. The problem is, though, is he could never really convince them to... buy them in mass. So he ended up producing a bunch of them and basically had to sell them off. Guess who they ended up in the hands of?
Well, based on the name, that...
No. French gangsters. Who were in a gang known as Les Apaches.
Okay.
It was basically a... In fact, it was a whole subculture that existed in Paris in the early 20th century. Basically, it was just a bunch of dudes who... Yeah, they named themselves exactly as you think. They named themselves after the Apaches. The American Indian... American Indian tribe right here in the U.S. that was infamous, at least to the Europeans, for the fact that they really had no fucks to give. the Apaches were the most, were probably the most, as far as the European colonists were concerned, they were the most, probably the most infamous tribe on the plains. They basically would come in, raid, and just leave nothing standing. And these people, these gentlemen in France, basically just up and embraced it. And these guys were freaking, you know, they were night muggers, street gangsters, hooligans, just criminals in general. And the thing is, they didn't just target anybody. They targeted the bourgeois. Or, well, you know, the emergent bourgeois. The emerging middle class in Paris.
Yeah.
And, in fact, here's a little thing here, a thing from called Le Petit Journal that had an article specifically about them. The Apache is the sore of Paris, more than 30,000 prowlers against 8,000 city policemen. So they were freaking everywhere. They basically terrified pretty much anybody with money on the streets of Paris. And it took a long time before they finally disappeared. Usually what happened... Oh, and as for the actual Apache revolver, eventually they would eventually just straight up abandon it for just regular old school garrote wire. Because it's cheaper and more plentiful.
Yeah.
But, so, the Apache revolver, like three weapons in one.
Yeah.
Gives you options.
Let's admit, it's a scary looking bastard, too.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's
a nice sense of progression.
It looks like something you'd find in Fallout, doesn't it?
It really does.
Or Wasteland, or
looks like something you could probably build in Fallout.
Yeah.
Here, this looks like something you could build in real life.
Yeah.
And not...
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been...
It has been built.
The proof is in the pudding.
I mean with, like, individual parts.
Yeah.
Crap.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Apache revolver, scary little bastard. And that has been this week's Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay. Are we ready for the nonsense?
There's plenty of it.
Yes, we had...
This is cut down from what we had before.
Yeah.
Yes, we actually had to go back and cut a good chunk of this shit because we had so much of it. So, we'll be starting with our assholes of the week. And those assholes are the Draper, is that Utah?
Yep.
The people of Draper, Utah, who booed a homeless man and threatened to impeach the mayor over a homeless shelter law proposal.
Yep. This is where we're at.
I think all rationality is like gone out the window at this point. So,
Pat, as our native Utahan,
yeah.
Thoughts? Curses?
Yes. What? Sorry, I didn't hear any of that.
Sorry, I was like, So, Patrick, is our native Utah, and you got thoughts, or...
Well, I was the one who put it there. There's really not much to
say.
These are... The Draper mayor, which is in the Salt Lake area, put two homeless shelter proposals on the table because they're needed in that area. I've personally seen just what a large homeless population there is in the Salt Lake area. Mm-hmm. They need to get all the shelters put up that they can, and the mayor came to the table with two proposals for having them built in Draper, which would be a good place to put them.
Mm-hmm.
And the NIMBY crowd showed up en masse.
All right, you need to describe who the NIMBY crowd is.
NIMBY is an acronym for Not In My Backyard.
Ah.
So, yeah. The residents, the torches and pitchforks showed up in the auditorium of Draper Middle School in protest of the proposals. And one offer was to simply use the Utah State Prison that's being moved anyway,
mm-hmm.
As a site of a homeless shelter. The mayor produced a homeless advocate for the shelters,
and an actual homeless person.
Yeah. They booed him out of there. They threatened to impeach the mayor. They threatened to file lawsuits against him. So he had no choice but to withdraw the offers.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep in mind, there are places in Utah where they just before this sort of paints the whole of Utah with a bad brush, just remember that there are parts in Utah that actively give homes to the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah. But
actually, that meme that was going around wasn't necessarily true either. The photo depicted was somewhere in Washington State, and I'm not sure exactly where it was. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, that. Unfortunately, it turned out not to be true that there was that going on in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, I know it wasn't in Salt Lake. It was in other parts of the state.
Oh. Maybe that's a different one than what I saw.
Yeah, but the point is, screw these people.
Yeah. And they're probably the same ones that show up to church every Sunday and believing what good Christians they are.
And a lot of these folks are Mormons, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
it's gross. Speaking of gross, we got our new our current president has basically... Well, he straight up doomed us all when he started his new climate change denial executive order, basically trying to delete all climate change research.
Hmm. Yeah, good luck with that, because not all the research.
This started quite a while ago. Day he went into office, people were scrambling to retrieve as much information off of the WhiteHouse.gov website regarding climate change as they could.
This is that whole mess coming to bear.
Yeah.
Well, it's been ongoing.
Yeah, I think the people working in those parts of the government have been trying to archive as much as possible, as well as a bunch of third parties have been trying to archive as much stuff as they could since mm-hmm. Trump got elected.
Yeah.
And obviously there's so much information that they have that it's really hard to do that. And essentially, as soon as he took office, things were gone, disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
This even mentions that when Stephen Harper took over in Canada a couple of years ago, that he closed down 11 departments of fisheries and oceans regional libraries, including the only Arctic Center. Hundreds of reports, studies containing well over a century of research were destroyed in that process. The historic loss from which we still have not recovered.
Yeah. Well, you have to understand that Stephen Harper was the son of Beelzebub, and it took us 8 years to get rid of him, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also still convinced that he may or may not have been a robot.
That is another popular theory.
Well, I mean, he did want to kill all humans, apparently. But, yeah.
Sort of the whole narrative of, oh, we're getting the coal people back to work. Those jobs aren't there anymore.
No. And the thing is, a lot of those people are starting to realize that, too.
Yeah.
And that does not bode well for Trump.
No. Well.
But, yeah, Trump seems he's going to fight the Paris Agreement that we finalized a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the rest of the countries that are in that treaty are not going to be happy. Hopefully they put as much force as they can.
Yeah.
Under Trump to not just say, oh, we don't believe this shit, so we're not going to do it. Because we can't have Trump dragging the rest of the world down with him.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, just for the record, rest of the world, if you decide that you might want to pass sanctions against the United States, we would kind of understand.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
When everybody's Sony TVs start costing, 15% more, maybe they'll look up and see what's going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, to wash that out of our mouth, we've got the hero of the week.
Hmm.
And, oh boy, there was no one else that could compare. I want to introduce you folks to a gentleman who lives in, I'm trying to remember where this was in. A gentleman by the name of Bernard Marx, who is originally from Poland, and he was a little boy in Poland during World War II, and he was Jewish, as was the rest of his family. He and his family were, when he was a little boy, rounded up by the Nazis and hauled off to concentration camps. He spent 5.5 years, some of them in Auschwitz and some of them in Dachau. Oof. This guy literally lived through the most infamous atrocity ever committed in the 20th century. This guy is hard as fucking nails, because the fact that he was able to survive more than 5 years in the concentration camp system is a miracle in and of itself. So basically he was, I'm still trying to find out where this was in. This story, by the way, is from HuffPost.
Cool.
This is in California. Okay. This was in California.
Sacramento.
Thank you so much. And while he, during this time, there was a public forum they were having on immigration. And Trump's ICE chief was there taking questions and, answering stuff. And so Mr. Marx comes up, he takes the microphone, he goes, "When I was a little boy in Poland, for no other reason but for being Jewish, I was hauled off by the Nazis. And for no other reason, I was picked up and separated from my family, who was exterminated in Auschwitz. And I am a survivor of Auschwitz and Dachau." And then after the applause, you could pretty much hear a pin drop. He then began to warn Sacramento County Sheriff Scott Jones, who was hosting the event, against working closely with Thomas Homan, who's the guy who's the head of ICE, the guy appointed by the Trump administration. And he basically says here, "I spent 5.5 years in concentration camps for one reason and one reason only, because we picked on people. And you, as the sheriff, who we elected as sheriff of this county, we did not elect you for sheriff of Washington, D.C. It's about time you side with the people here. And when this gentleman stands up there and says he doesn't go after people, he should read today's Sacramento Bee." The Bee is the headline, is the newspaper. "The because in today's B, the Supreme Court Justice of the state of California objected to ICE coming in and taking people away from the courts. Don't tell me that this is a lie. We stand up here, Mr. Jones. Don't forget, history is not on your side. Folks, when a person who spent spent 5 years in concentration camps, Nazi concentration camps in Germany, in Poland, is telling you that the shit you're doing is starting to give him flashbacks, you should probably pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now I feel they're a little too full of themselves to realize it.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, you're right, because they don't have the footage here, but Mr. Holman actually answers him and basically gives the most robotic bullshit answer you can possibly have. Just no emotion whatsoever.
Yep.
Oh, and did I mention that he's getting hate on Facebook now?
Should get hate everywhere.
No, I mean Mr. Marks.
No.
Oh, my God.
That's not cool.
No. But it's also disgustingly not surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can spend 5 years in concentration camp must have been so deadly, huh? Fucking assholes.
They fucking were.
He was a teenager around then.
Hmm. Yep.
So to survive in that at that age.
Yeah.
There are a few things in this world that are more special than Holocaust deniers.
Hmm.
Yeah,
not so
I
much
troll
when they're in the office.
Hmm.
Yeah, political office.
Yeah. As some of you may know, I have a little hobby of trolling neo-Nazis online because it's just so much fun to do.
Yeah.
And I hear all that shit. You know. Even the Red Cross doesn't believe it now. Yeah, they do. In fact, they showed very effectively that when they went that one time when the Red Cross delegation was able to visit some of the camps during the war, they showed that they were very specifically misled.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you'll hear blaming the Soviets. And then, of course, you'll hear the Jews and all this other shit. And the thing you start to realize very quickly is that for any of this to work, there would be so many people would have to be in on the conspiracy.
Hmm.
And that's when you start to realize something should be bullshit.
Yeah.
But no, and also you'll also realize a lot of these folks who deny the Holocaust happened, you always get the feeling that they kind of wish it did.
Hmm.
But anyway, this man was extremely brave. He is a damn hero, and he deserves all the accolades, all the medals, all the trophies. Give it to him.
Deserves respect.
And we really need to pay attention to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, if a man who went through what he went through is seeing what you're doing and it's starting to have aspects of that, you need to
take a long, hard look in the mirror.
Yeah. And also, I just want to say, he was not trying to directly compare what he went through during the Holocaust to people being deported or having to ICE. That's not the point. It's the fact that there are aspects of it.
Yeah.
Very problematic, very scary aspects that usually lead to other aspects.
Hmm.
And that's the reason why you need to be concerned.
Yeah.
And, so that was our regular hero of the week. We also have our bonus hero, and this one was just entertaining. Angela Rye. She went on CNN. She was interviewed by, what's her name?
Brooke?
Yeah, Brooke, trying to remember what her name is, but she hosts the Yeah, she hosts the thing on one of the afternoon shows on CNN.
Yeah.
And she was also there, and she was there, and so was Joe Walsh, who was a one-term Tea Party congressman.
And a guy who, every time I see it trending, Joe Walsh trending, I'm like, oh, shit, did he die? No, it's this asshole saying something stupid.
Not the guy from the Eagles. No.
The other Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
The one who weaseled his way out of paying his own children's child support.
Hmm. Yep. Also, you need to know is Joe Walsh is a racist piece of shit.
Well, yeah.
And he only does a smidgen of an effort to hide it.
Yeah, so this whole bit here is about him saying that we didn't really vet Obama before he got elected. We lowered the bar for him.
Yeah. Now you have to ask yourself, what do you mean lowered the bar?
Jeez. If Obama was a lowered bar, what, did you drop the bar in the river for Trump?
Yeah, and that's what Angela argues, like, there's no way that we lowered the bar for him because he's an established state senator, congressional senator, speaker, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Way more experience in politics than Trump has ever had.
Also a law professor.
Yeah.
Law professor from Yale. He's a Yale graduate.
And it comes out pretty quick in calling him a bigot, Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
And he starts getting offended by it. Don't call me the B word. Which is hilarious to say to a black woman. She's like, "Are you, excuse me?" And she just fucking rips into him.
Oh, yeah. She roasted him like a suckling pig.
And it's exceptional stuff. I didn't even notice this until now. This is on her personal account, YouTube account. So give her some hits.
Yeah.
Because this is an exceptional video. She's been doing great work lately.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has no regrets to calling these people out.
No. And she straight up is like, you know, this interview is going on. Is like, look, I'm not going to respond to a bigot. Just, I'm not going to give him the time. Yeah. He doesn't deserve it. And I want you to understand, this shit is, like, proven. Like, she even pointed out the shit that he tweeted himself.
Yeah.
The, you know, we lowered the bar for Obama, and, you know, we all know he was elected because he was black. And she's like, you know, I'm not going to take it.
Hmm.
I'm not just going to, you know, I'm not going to do the good CNN thing and just, you know, try and
treat everybody's opinion like they're equal.
Yeah. And I guess Joe Walsh just really was not prepared to deal with it.
No.
Good.
He basically came off like a snowflake.
And she definitely talks a lot about how because he's black, he has to work twice as hard to get any form of respect. And we definitely saw that for the 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no controversies, no scandals, at least nothing that was founded in fact.
Or, you know, wasn't drone related.
Yeah, Trump couldn't even make it one day without scandals.
Yeah, so.
Well, I mean, he couldn't even make it like 1 hour. Mm. Like, he was, you know, he took the oath and then like an hour later they were already lying about the size of the crowd that showed up.
Yeah.
And yeah, just go there, watch it, watch the video. It is amazing. She does not hold back at all.
And the part of the thing that turns that whole interview into a shit show is just the delay in the feeds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Since everybody's in a different spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's lots of points where she's like, What the hell is this guy saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was our bonus hero of the week. So we got one more serious piece of news, and then it's nonsense from on there. So the everybody knows the HB2 bullshit that went down in North Carolina. Basically cost the governor his seat.
Yep.
Even though he did everything in his power to hold on to it as long as he could, and then as he left, he basically torched the shit.
Yeah,
which luckily they were able to undo.
Yeah. And he's also having trouble finding a job now, too.
Yeah. Gee, wonder why.
Well, there was a repeal bill that was being done, and ultimately what ended up happening was a compromise bill that doesn't actually repeal anything.
It keeps the fundamental parts of it active until December 2020. Just says, hey, HB2 is no longer a thing, but you can't change anything about it for another 3-4 years.
And sadly, I don't think, you know, they have a new Democratic governor now, and he basically, one of his promises was to repeal this shit. Honestly, part of me is sure that this is probably the best he was going to get. But it still sucks.
Yeah. And hopefully the NCAA doesn't get fooled by this.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of let up on their promise not to have any more big college basketball or other sport championships in North Carolina.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Governor McCrory. You may have bankrupted your state for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think it was like something like $3.5 billion they lost out on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some huge amount of money that that doesn't make anybody look good, especially when the new guy who ran pretty much on the promise of getting rid of this thing can't even get that done either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, wonderful. Hmm. And oh, the folks in North Carolina must be so happy. Well, anyway, moving on from there, Mexico City, Mexico, the folks in Mexico City have been having a problem with, sexual harassment and inconsensual groping on their subway system, which basically any country with a train system has had problems with this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Japan, in particular, has an infamous problem with it. So the folks in Mexico City came up with a, I think, brilliant idea. Folks, say hello to the penis seat.
Okay.
So, in one of its subway cars, they have installed
a new cushion
for one of their seats that is sculpted to look like a man's torso and penis.
Okay.
And says, for men only.
Yeah. Just to make, it says, exclusive para hombres.
Hmm.
Exclusive for men. That's the sign that's over it. Basically to get male riders thinking about the sexual harassment that women endure every day.
I don't know how well this will work, but it's an interesting approach.
And the commercials they got are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Guys trying to put down, like, their coats to shield them from whatever weirdness they would feel, and nope.
Mm-hmm. I freaking love it. Oh, man. And you know, this is something that could only happen in Mexico. If we tried to pull this shit in the U.S.
Boy,
I mean, I'm trying to think of another country that would possibly do this.
Italy. Netherlands. Netherlands.
Hmm.
Parts of Germany.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Californian. I have a bunch of friends, straight or gay, male or female, that would no doubt Definitely want to get a kick out of sitting on the seat. So.
I think part of me thinks that Mexico City may have inadvertently created a whole new fetish.
Possibly.
Now let's get your selfie with the penis seat. Yep.
I mean, there's already this fetish where, I guess, like, people try to have sex with objects.
Mm-hmm.
So this would, like, really enhance that, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, actually, man.
And Trump wants to build a wall.
Mm-hmm. You know, just build a wall of these, have Mexico build a wall of these across their border.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we'll be avoided by some people.
Yeah.
And embraced by others.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. All right.
Don't know if Trump wants that to happen, but yeah.
For that reason, they should do it.
Mm.
For that reason alone, they should do it.
Yeah.
We'll even help them pay for it. Mm. But... So, moving on. Oh boy.
This will totally go well with that. What was that? That digital condom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Smart condom.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're still waiting on that review, Brendan.
Nope. Not happening.
Moving on. So, those folks out there, those of you who work in graphic design, or, you know, make signs for a living.
Yeah.
There is a particular font that exists that is just universally despised by just so many groups of people.
Everyone that's not your grandmother.
Yeah, just hates it. It is the most, and yet it is also probably the most popular.
Hmm. It's Comic Sans.
Yeah, Comic Sans. Which, for those you don't know, was actually designed after the lettering that Dave Gibbons did for Watchmen.
Hmm.
Yep, Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that particular font was created by a gentleman named by a gentleman named Vincent Conair, who was a member of Microsoft's typography team.
Hmm.
And he worked for people's like Encarta, Microsoft Publisher, Creative Writer. And they all wanted basically a zillion types of fonts. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's looked at Microsoft Word can see just all the fonts you got. You got your regular Times New Roman,
Wingdings.
Yeah,
is anybody fluent in Wingdings? I would love to know if there are people that are fluent in that.
God, I hope not.
And basically... And one of the things that they had these projects was a program called Microsoft Bob.
Yeah.
Which was a program that was designed to make computers more accessible to children. And then so Vincent Conair, he says that one day he booted up and out walked this cartoon dog talking with a speech bubble in Times New Roman. And he's like, that's bullshit. Dogs don't speak and talk in Times New Roman.
Only a designer would think that.
And so he went back to all of his favorite comics, you know, Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, saw the hand lettering.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, of course, about old school comics, you know, when lettering was done by hand, is a lot of them were done like they were hand lettered, but like typeface.
Yeah.
Obviously, you could tell they weren't typeface because, you know, you could tell it was handwritten.
Yeah.
So he scanned and copied some of the lettering. Well, he could have, anyway. And then he just decided, screw it. So then he took it and started mimicking some of them on his screen.
Hmm.
It was just him drawing with a mouse. That was it.
Hmm.
If he deleted something, if
there was explains a lot.
Yeah. A bunch of letters went through a bunch of different versions. He had no straight lines to work with. He didn't even have to make things look right. And basically, he just had fun with it. Hmm. And basically, that's how we ended up with Comic Sans.
Yep. 30 years later, we're still stuck with it.
Yep. The most beloved and most hated font in the world.
Hmm.
It was included, for a lot of folks don't know, it was included, of course, in Windows 95, yeah. Which is the... basically the granddaddy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it wasn't the first version of Windows, but it was the first version of Windows that was like...
first massive success.
Yeah. Really. Like, it was mass consumption. Remember, the internet started to become a thing right around 1995.
Yeah.
And pretty sure Windows actually, it really didn't go out. And I mean, it went out, but it didn't really become plentiful until, I think, around 1996. So, obviously, this coming out at the same time as the internet, you know, went public and became a thing, obviously it was just a match made in heaven.
Yeah. He talks about the popularity of it and also the backlash.
Yeah.
A group called Banned Comic Sans was formed to educate people about the uses of typefaces, though they emailed him to ask if it was okay to set it up. Seems silly, but I said knock yourselves out. Well, that backlash has calmed down, except on Twitter.
Yeah.
So people just don't use it right.
Mm-hmm.
It was intended for novice computer users and succeeded really well with that market.
Yeah.
But then people haven't really used it right since then.
No.
Like, say, the people running the Higgs boson project at CERN. They used it on their big proposal.
Don't do that.
Don't. Just... it's meant specifically for the use of education of children.
Yeah.
That's its purpose.
Yeah.
Don't try to... I've only ever used Comic Sans once. I was having trouble changing my broadband to Sky, so wrote them a letter in Comic Sans saying how disappointed I was. I got a £10 refund. In those cases, I would recommend it. Basic theory is that typography should not shout, but Comic Sans shout.
Shouts. Mm-hmm.
And people use it in email. They use it in their notes they put up on bulletin boards in the office. It's just a really stupid way. A lot of people use it. It's just their normal font.
Yeah. And it's mostly because, you know, a lot of those folks, you know, when obviously people really started to use Microsoft Word right around the time when, you know, Windows 95 came out. And the thing is, Comic Sans, when you're trying to, shall we say, for lack of a better term, pretty up your typing, Comic Sans is usually one of the first options that's given to you.
Yeah, because it's right near the top.
It's
so,
C.
Yeah.
So you also understand why it was so plentiful to begin with.
Yeah.
Because remember, folks, this, you know, Windows 95 was basically the first sort of mass consumption form of Windows. And a lot of folks still were not that familiar with computers as they are now.
Yeah.
That's how AOL got big.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I was going to say, like, back in the days where me and Pat and a few others were active in the GameSpot forums, when somebody was hitting you up on AOL Instant Messenger and they were using Comic Sans, that's somebody you don't respond to.
Yeah.
Nope.
Either there was somebody you didn't want to talk to or they were a bot.
Exactly.
You know what's worse than Comic Sans is bolded Comic Sans.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's like the difference between, you know, you taking a shit and then you taking a shit and then smashing your face into it.
Yeah.
Why would anybody bold Comic Sans?
It happens.
You really want to mean it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Going from Crunchy Cheetos to Cheetos Poofs. So,
yeah. Oh, Patrick, you just missed the most delightful conversation on Comic Sans.
Yeah, Pat, I was just telling them how back in the day with the GameSpot forums, if people found our SNs on AOL Instant Messenger and they IM'd us with Comic Sans, we just ignore them.
Yeah. I can't hear Patrick, but...
Oh, well.
Yeah, I was muted. Sorry.
Okay.
yeah, it's the truth.
Yeah. But, yeah, so...
Oh, yeah, another bad use for it they mention here. Funeral announcements.
Oh, my God.
Why would you do the thing?
Because no. They were a fun-loving person, so use the font that was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might as well just use Comic Sans for the epitaph.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like
I'm
I said,
sure
I...
Somewhere in the world, it's been done.
Yeah.
Yes, it has been done.
I'm pretty sure there have been people who've used Comic Sans on their resumes.
Oh, yeah, that's an easy way to know you don't want to deal with that person.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. They're saving
you easy way
time.
To throw the resume away.
Yeah.
But, we can't have these people propagating in our workplace.
Nope.
Yeah.
Oh, God,
I
think
they were actually a graphic designer.
You sure for April Fool's Day you guys don't want to make our site Comic Sans just for the day?
You know what? We really should.
That would actually, you know, if...
Just put up your Mass Effect review in Comic Sans.
Yeah.
If we must participate in this horrid tradition, that would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
Just do that for all our big reviews. Is Comic Sans and Zelda, Mass Effect, Horizon, Persona.
You think featured on the front page and then fix it the next day?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. No, we'll have Pat do it for Ultimate Hockey and submit that to the guys who did the game.
All our games to get a four.
I'd like to have them back.
Yeah. They're good guys. They're friends of the show. That
yeah.
I'd like
to keep
the
font
way.
Based on the score.
Yeah. All right. So
speaking of hockey,
yes. Yeah, so USA Hockey has reached a deal with the women's teams on better pay equality with the men's team.
This is good.
Yeah, this is good.
So
I have
jack shit pretty much.
Yeah, pretty well. Women's sports
about
in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Women's sports in general get paid shit.
Yeah.
Which is why I think, and I've been saying this for a long time now, it's time to just get rid of the sort of gender segregation in sports, period.
Mm.
Just give a set of standards, and if you can meet those standards, regardless of what your gender is, you should be on the team.
Yeah.
I really think it's time.
Yeah, that's how I'd do it.
You know, we want that sci-fi future to come quicker. Well,
some of us do.
Yeah.
You want to see the details of this new deal?
Yeah, let's go ahead and
see. USA
this
Hockey
is from ESPN, by the way.
Yeah, USA Hockey will allocate $950,000 by the final year of the backloaded agreement to compensation pool for the players. So previously, USA Hockey paid each member of the women's national team $6,000 for the six-month training residency for each Olympic Games. So that's $1,000 a month.
Hmm.
The other 3.5 years, the players' only financial support came in training stipends that the U.S. Olympic Committee provided athletes. Those stipends range from $750 per month for newer members to $2,000 for the cap for veterans. Going forward, every player will get the maximum $2,000 monthly stipend, regardless of experience, which is a big difference.
Mm.
That right there is at least a $24,000 yearly salary just for this.
Yeah.
USA Hockey will also pay each national team member an additional $2,000 per month when the new contract kicks in, so that doubles it.
Yeah. Mm.
By the way,
that's
whatever
when you talk about livable money.
Yep.
Yeah. By the way, whatever you do, you go to that link and read that article. Don't look at the comments.
Yeah, because the comments always
are shit. Are a serious shit show.
Yeah.
Yeah. You add sports to gender topics, it's a huge shit show.
Yeah.
For the first time, USA Hockey will pay the women's team performance bonuses. That means no matter how well they did, they never got a bonus before. $20,000 for gold medal, $15,000 for silver. It doesn't mention anything about bronze, so maybe not there. But that could potentially push them up to a six-figure salary for the year of the Olympics. Nice. So,
yeah.
And they get the same level of travel arrangements and insurance coverage as the men's team, which is great. The women's per diem was bumped up from $15 a day for non-travel days at events to $50, same as the men's.
Yep.
And players will establish a committee to make recommendations on how the Federation can improve its marketing, scheduling, public relations, efforts, and promotions of the women's game. USA Hockey will add a foundation position to improve fundraising and other efforts for its girls' development teams, which currently receive virtually nothing compared to the $3.5 million for the boys' program, and the additional $1.4 million that USA Hockey pours into the USHL. So, yeah, it's really nice to get, seems like mostly on par with the men's. They've been fighting for this for about the past 15 months, so it's great that everybody came to their senses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a start, I hope.
Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, in other Olympic news, for the first time in years, really, the Olympics are finally being aired live in the U.S.
Yeah.
Is it going to be on pay or on broadcast?
Yeah.
This is broadcast.
Yeah, broadcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, NBC is going to start putting them back on when they actually air.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which the first Olympics are in Pyeongchang.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what, South Korea?
Yeah.
Okay.
This isn't going to be the next one.
It's the Winter Games. Japan.
Yeah, it's the Winter Games. And then after
next year.
Yeah, and then after that, you know, they'll be doing the summer ones too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't know how far behind it is on the schedule, as far as how much of a time difference it is.
Well, if you saw the shit show that was the last Olympics.
Yeah, they were usually shifting them at least 6 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, they would just make the whole thing streamable.
Yeah.
That's the other thing they need to do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whether or not people actually complain about this, I'm sure people are. I still don't think this will impact ratings in a positive way. Less and less people are watching TVs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, NBC has done Olympic streaming, but because the fact that they weren't broadcasting them at the right times, it didn't really matter.
They're also cutting them up.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you only got, like, mostly the U.S. competitors.
Yeah.
Just whatever made a better story.
Mm-hmm.
So, difference, if it's 11:45 a.m. in on a Sunday in Pyeongchang in South Korea, it is 10:45 on Saturday in Washington, D.C., on the East Coast.
So
it'd be 7:45 over on Danreb's.
Hmm.
So almost 12 hours difference.
Mm-hmm. 12 hour difference, but, you know, if you're into the Olympics.
Yeah. Or over 12 hours difference.
Yeah.
So.
Tune in the morning for the night stuff and at night for the morning stuff.
All right.
Yeah, you just got to avoid the tweets.
Yeah. So now in awesome science news. SpaceX, that is, you know, Elon Musk's company, they just made the first successful reflight of an orbitable class rocket.
They reused a Falcon 9.
And it actually succeeded.
24 hours?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's huge.
People forget that, you know, this is the first time they've actually had a space vessel that, you know, other than, I guess, NASA, who, you know, used the shuttles, but, yeah.
I don't know how that ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another stage where they land this stuff back on is called Of Course I Still Love You.
Yeah. So, we're that much closer now to, you know, casual space flight.
One of the big problems with NASA back in the days, it cost so much money just to get the big shuttle ready to fly back again.
Yeah.
And that would take months to get it ready.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's so awesome. I mean, we're going to have casual spaceflight in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
Might not be affordable, but...
So yeah. Who's in?
I'll try.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm 80 and don't give a shit anymore. Again, I'm not afraid to die.
I want to go around Dark Side of the Moon while listening to Dark Side of the Moon. So maybe that's something that can happen.
Yeah. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to be one of the first people to bone in space.
You know, there are probably people competing for that honor.
Yeah.
I want to say they've done that study on the International Space Station.
Oh, God damn it.
Well, see, here's the thing. You guys know, of course, you guys know Hideo Kojima's Snatcher.
There's not much else to do out there.
Yes.
Yeah. But you guys, you know also his other game, Police Knots.
Yes.
Which is the other visual novel adventure game he made.
Yeah.
Sci-fi based. And they actually bring that up in the game. And one of the, you know, and you know Hideo, he does his research.
Yeah.
And he brings up about the fact that, you know, since gravity is less there, the crow's feet disappear, the laugh lines, a lot of the wrinkles and the stretch marks disappear.
Mm.
Your boobs are perkier.
I was just thinking that.
Well, this is the game where Meryl first appeared, you know.
Yeah. So.
So apparently it also does amazing things for the ass. Mm. But yeah, so, yay, casual space flight. It's coming.
Yeah, eventually.
And then you will.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah, so, finally, for our penultimate segment of the night.
Trailers.
Yep, we got trailers for some new films coming out. So the very first one we've got is Inconvenient Sequel.
Yep.
Which is the sequel to the world famous but very successful box office documentary Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the movie that popularized climate change in the popular imagination.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they've decided to make a sequel.
And yep. Guess who's the villain?
Yep, they're not really pulling any punches in this one.
Nope. No, they are not.
And now this is so, kind of all about the follow-up, like, what have we been doing in the past 10 years or so?
Yeah. So those who don't know, yeah, the original, I think the first film came out around
2006.
What was it, like 2005?
2006.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's they pretty much shit all over Donald Trump.
Yeah, they make no bones about.
This trailer just begins with Trump.
Yep.
Yeah.
You guys like
talk about how it's freezing here. What happened to global warming?
Yeah.
Being an ass, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, take a look at that. I hope the sequel's as good as the original was, because, I gotta admit, for basically just Al Gore in front of, doing a PowerPoint presentation for an hour and a half, still pretty compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially we got the, biggest threat to our ability to save humanity.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yep.
So, other than that, of course, we're all of the Justice League.
Yeah, Justice stuff. League. And, yeah, like Dan Reb said, you know, it's the DC can do a good trailer, but we don't know if the movie will follow up.
Yeah.
We have to wait. I'm not really too thrilled about the butchered version of Beatles Come Together in this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Yeah, it's not a great cover they're using there.
No.
It's not even the good cover.
No.
They didn't use the Aerosmith cover, which is actually as good as the original. No, they had to
use some weird one that I never heard of and wish I hadn't.
Yeah.
But
At least you don't have to worry about Aquaman being potentially gay.
Yeah. No. They picked the right actor. He is black, though.
Yeah, he's black.
Samoan.
Hmm. Oh, Samoan. So,
even better.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's his name? Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa. Khal Drogo.
Mm. Yep, he's
hey, I mean, he managed to make Aquaman look cool, which has never happened, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Flash is kind of growing on me. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's too shiny.
Yeah.
Supposedly, the rumor is that he gets the actual Flash suit at the end.
Hmm.
That's like a piece together, like, government suit.
Yeah.
Armor suit.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one line in the movie where he asks Bruce Wayne, well, what is your superpower? I'm rich.
That's true.
Okay.
He's a paranoid rich man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Momoa was born in Hawaii.
Yeah.
As a Samoan.
So he's a native Hawaiian.
Yeah. So.
That's
all right. We'll wait and see.
Yeah. We'll wait and see. I do like this I do like this version of Aquaman, though.
Yeah,
he looks cool.
Yeah,
especially compared to the other Aquaman, who was basically an Aryan mermaid.
Yeah.
And oh, like man, that's like the best part.
Ineffectual Batman is in here. Mm. Like him on his Batmobile is like just missing everybody. So Aquaman and the others just use it as a springboard to take out enemies.
Yeah.
Right. I just think DC's screwing up their whole cinematic universe concept by rushing straight into the giant crossover.
Yeah. But I mean, I would say, you know, it does have to happen eventually, but I mean, it took Marvel four movies, four or five movies before they finally did the Avengers?
More than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that version of Come Together is by Junkie XL and Gary Clark Jr.
Oh, so that's what.
See, the weird thing is, like, I took a look back. Marvel did take a few movies, but as far as, like, the rate of time, it was only a few years before the Avengers came. And it's the same case here if we consider Man of Steel part of the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just seems.
So the weird part is, though, is that they still didn't give everyone, like, their own movie. I mean, yeah, we have Wonder Woman, but Flash didn't get one. Aquaman didn't get one. We're going straight to it here. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, the Flash does have his own TV series, but
But that's a totally different thing.
Is that even connected, or?
I want to say they're going to be separate universes, but for the most part, no.
Supergirl has the original Superman, right?
Hmm.
The cinematic Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So technically there's that link, since I'm sure everybody else has been on her show.
Yeah. Yeah, what I think most people are worried about is because while it did take three or four movies for Marvel to get into the Avengers, at least the movies that came out were kind of getting progressively better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were all decent. I mean, we look at, people say Thor 2 is bad, but it wasn't like as bad as, I don't know, BVS.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually had fun with Suicide Squad. Yeah, it wasn't any good, but I understood it.
The second half of Batman vs. Superman was pretty good.
Hmm.
The first half is just where Superman and Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne are just mad at each other, just brooding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, we can go on and on about BVS, but my main thing is that no way did we in any way earn Doomsday. That was way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there wasn't really any build up to it either.
Yeah, it just kind of happened.
Because you got to remember when Doomsday first appeared in the comics, there was like months of build up to it.
Mm. Well, probably first the half biggest story arc like I've ever done.
Couple of months. Mm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That was a long build up in the first half of that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing. Doomsday killed Superman. Yeah, Doomsday killed Superman.
Yeah.
You know,
let's just spoil BVS, guys. Let's totally do that.
That's okay. Nobody's going to watch it anyway.
Nobody cares, yeah.
Everyone who cares has already seen it.
Yeah. You know, it's just...
Newsflash, Eris dies in Final Fantasy VII.
Oh.
See, yeah, I got that the hard way.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, also, Citizen Kane, it was his sled. That's what Rosebud was.
Yeah.
And then finally, our last trailer is Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Yeah, it's the standout one of this year. Well, of this batch.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised it's taken them this long to give Valerian and Loreline their own movie, considering how much the people making Star Wars ripped off the original comics. I am not joking.
Hmm.
There is a bunch.
Like a... Go ahead.
There is just a bunch of shit that they lifted straight from, like literally, you know, Leia's slave outfit, a lot of Darth Vader's design, the Millennium Falcon. Whole thing about encasing someone in carbonite. And the thing is, it's known for a fact that they had Valerian comics on the set.
Yeah.
While they were making them. So it's not like this is something that was completely out of the blue. They had them on hand.
Yeah.
But anyway, I hope this movie's really good.
Yeah,
it's a perfect movie for Luc Besson of Fifth Element fame.
Yeah.
Extremely colorful and vibrant looking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the trailer looks great, so.
Oh yeah,
I'm optimistic.
The effects have that sort of you know, that little thing in between. You know, it's kind of cartoony and kind of not. I like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, finally, our ultimate. Segment of the evening. We are now going to continue
picking up where we left off last week.
Game Pro number 109, Gamer Mag Remembrances. Now, we left off last time on, let's see, what was it?
Page 36, 37?
Yes, I believe it was page 36.
Yeah. Well, the link goes right to it, so.
Yeah. So, hold on, I need to get the
I scroll there.
Yeah, because we were talking about Joe Montana football.
After
the scuba VR headset that Phillips made.
So the Joe Montana thing. Basically, there was a Joe Montana sports talk football starring Joe Montana that Sega made, and it,
decent
I guess,
game.
Yeah, and it bombed.
I liked it.
I liked it too.
It's basically Madden.
Yeah. But it basically, it basically bombed as far as like sales go, and Joe Montana was not happy.
Oh, he sued them.
Yeah, he sued them for $5 million.
I remember this.
I'm pretty sure that's more than what his contract was worth back then. Shit, that's
that was that. We were also talking about
3DO.
Yeah, the 3DO. Specifically, it was talking about the M2 technology.
Yeah.
Which
didn't see electronics. The light of day for the home, anyway.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of arcade games made with it.
Yeah. It originally was going to be for, I think the 3DO originally wanted to do something with it, but no, it never made its way to home consoles. Instead, they used it for a public arcade cabinet.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a shame.
Yeah, they're kind of rare now.
Right. So underneath, we got maybe some minor news. Namco of Japan doing a Famous Star 64 for the Nintendo 64. Midway Home Entertainment signing a deal with Crystal Dynamics.
And there's Gex.
Yep, for Gex, Enter the Gecko, and Pandemonium 2.
Gex was a solid 2D platformer.
Yeah.
3D. X was 3D. A 3D game.
No, never not the first one.
Well, no. You're right, though. Enter the Gecko was 3D, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really loved Enter the Gecko, though. I remember having just tons of fun with that, because the whole thing was, it was basically him going through different TV channels that focused on different things.
Yeah, and Dana Gould making fun of video game and pop culture tropes.
Yeah. And it was... I forgot who it was that voiced him.
Dana Gould.
Dana Gould.
Dana Gould, yeah. But, yeah, and Pandemonium, too. Did anybody here play the original Pandemonium?
Oh, yeah. I played the shit out of that game.
Oh, that game was just...
It was bananas. I'll give you.
It was obviously made on substances.
Yes,
of the mind altering variety.
There were definitely substances involved.
Yeah, yeah. I remember being scared off by that cover.
Yeah. But it's a great
also the fact that there was two characters. There was the one dude who was like the jester with the jester head staff, and then there was the chick. I forgot what her name was.
Okay. Yeah, I
can't remember. And Gex totally nails her in Enter the Gecko in the ending.
Yeah.
I am not joking.
Nope.
I am 100% not joking. Hmm. So, and then we got an ad for Machine Hunter.
That wasn't good.
It was a 3D shooter. It was forgettable.
Yeah.
Eurocom.
Mm-hmm.
Makers of many games.
Yeah. Porters of many games as well.
Oh, yeah. Then we got a Sega Saturn Netlink.
Yes.
Yes. An ad.
I was in on this.
Yeah. So describe what Netlink was.
Well, it was a 56K modem that you plugged into the cartridge port of the Sega Saturn and did exactly what you would expect it to.
$100.
I like how this particular ad, instead of including Daytona, has a second copy of Saturn Bomberman.
Yeah.
But Saturn Bomberman over Netlink was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You also have Virtualon down there, too.
Yep. I never did get the Netlink edition of Virtualon, unfortunately.
Mm. Is that New York City is getting bombed there?
That's I'm pretty sure this
ad is that today.
Japanese bombing New York.
We're laughing at a bomb.
Yeah. Next up, we've got a mission of NetPro, specifically about Ultima Online.
This segment of GamePro was actually my introduction to much of the MMO genre.
Yep. And Ultima Online was the introduction to a lot of people to MMOs.
Oh, it was, yeah.
And pretty much the longest lasting.
Isn't it still going?
I think they actually shut it down.
Probably
recently.
Fan servers. Mm.
Yeah, it's fan servers now, but it carried on for a long time. In fact, it was pretty much the one Ultima property that survived.
Still the test of time.
Yeah, well, not just test of time, but Origins getting sold to EA.
Yeah.
Seems like it's still up. There's an official site.
It's probably
that says
fan servers then.
14-day free trial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Account stuff and all that.
Yeah.
It's EA.
Yeah, and this was back in the day when, the Ultima name would sell anything.
Yeah, broadsword. Mm-hmm. Whoever the hell that is.
Yeah. And, it's a shame what happened to Origin Systems, but. Ultima Online still exists.
Focused on Ultima Online and Dark Age of Camelot.
Yep.
Oh my God. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Age of Camelot. That was a
someone somewhere is still playing that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right this moment.
Well, mm-hmm. EA's bankrolling them.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, on the other page, we've got an ad for Mace the Dark Age.
Yes.
Again, probably one of the most
filthy pleasure fighters ever.
One of the most criminally underrated fighting games of all time.
Yes.
Just a ton of fun to play.
Yeah.
Especially in the arcade. And then of course we've got
GoldenEye.
We got an ad for everybody, probably everyone's first multiplayer console shooter.
Mine was South Park on the 64.
Yeah. And it didn't sour you?
No, I like throwing the fart bombs and causing the frame rate to drop.
Yeah. So there was GoldenEye.
Wait.
Yeah. GoldenEye 64.
Yeah.
That game has not held up well.
Nope.
It has not.
Well, even back in the day, I thought it was slow as hell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
But now, it's archaic as all hell.
Yeah.
Once the analog sticks became a thing.
Yeah.
And then
we have a two-pager.
Next up, we've got an ad for... There it is.
Final Fantasy VII. The game that sold more PlayStations than people are probably wanting to admit.
It's to a human what headlights are to a deer.
Well, in context, it really is.
Yeah. This game, God. You know what? We'll talk about it later because they got a whole thing about it in this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So next up, we've got
GX TV.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted one of these so bad.
Yep.
Back in the day.
So this was a television that was specifically designed for gamers.
Yep.
It had its own sort of fold out stereo system. If you were a gamer back then, this was one of those things you desperately wanted.
Yeah.
And look at all that stuff down at the bottom of those businesses that no longer exist.
Two of them exist.
Yeah.
Best Buy and Toys R Us.
Yeah, the only two that are still around.
KB Toys where I pre-ordered some of my PS2 launch games.
Toys R Us is where I encountered one of these, like, in person.
Yeah.
It was hooked up to their PlayStation 1 demo unit. The year must have been 1999 or 98.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 98. And they had Castlevania Symphony of the Night running on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that
this was before HD was a thing or anyone knew about RGB connections or whatever. Just seeing Symphony of the Night on this TV with this sound system, I didn't want to leave.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But, so of all the businesses down there in the corner, Best Buy and Toys R Us are the only ones still around. EB Games, Funko Land, and KB Toy Works.
EB Games still exists overseas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a GameStop property.
Yeah.
And Funko Land just became GameStop.
Yep.
Yeah, around here, it was those two and Babbage's all turned into GameStops.
Oh, God, yep. Babbage's.
All right. All right, and then next page, there it is. We might as well start talking about it for the 6-page deal that they had here. Look at that rating down there at the bottom.
6-page review.
Yep. And look at the rating. Look, it's...
Ran the table.
Five.
Not a lot of games did that.
Mm-hmm.
Fives everywhere.
Fives everywhere. This game... We've talked about Final Fantasy VII before. And we will talk about it again. And we will say a lot of the same stuff again because it bears repeating. Final Fantasy VII, it is really difficult to sort of the younger generations of gamers who grew up on Final Fantasy VII hype. You grew up as Final Fantasy VII being the greatest thing ever. Because for a generation of, for a lot of people, it was.
It was their first RPG?
Yeah. And... TV tropes, they've got as everybody knows, is everybody's favorite, time vampire on the internet.
Yes.
They have a trope on there they call Seinfeld is unfunny.
Now, I was going to say, we are probably all, without exception, avid tropers, right?
Yeah. And, well you should be.
Well, I don't go there just because I know that if I spend any time there, I will spend all of my time there, so... Yeah.
But basically, just to describe, Seinfeld Unfunny is the idea that something comes out that is so original and revolutionary that it's then copied by just about everything else, so much so that what made it original and revolutionary to begin with just becomes a cliche.
Yeah.
And Final Fantasy VII basically suffers that.
Yeah.
This game, when it came out, was a game changer. it was, for a lot of people, the very first JRPG they ever played. It was the first JRPG that was a mainstream success.
Mm-hmm.
Before Final Fantasy VII, RPGs in general were a niche in the gaming world.
JRPGs, this is the first one that caught up to the number.
I don't know if they were a niche in the gaming world, but in modern popular culture they were.
Yeah.
In gaming, they already had a pretty solid
substantial following, yeah. But this game... So, and the thing is, there were a lot of people before this game came out that were pissed at Squaresoft. And the reason they were pissed at Squaresoft is because they left Nintendo for Sony. Up to this point, all of the Final Fantasy titles that we had played have been on Nintendo systems.
Mm-hmm.
The last Final Fantasy one that came before this, Final Fantasy VI, which of course was Final Fantasy III over here in the U.S., was a Super Nintendo game. And then before that...
They worked on.
Yeah. And then before that, it was either Super Nintendo or Nintendo or Game Boy. But then they went and they left them... You know, Squaresoft left Nintendo, which at that point was an established, game.
A known quantity
for Sony, who were just entering the gaming world.
Yeah, people don't know if it was going to be more of the FMV-focused consoles that just failed.
Yeah.
Or if this is going to be a whole new thing.
Yeah. So Square had a lot riding on this game. And then it came out, and all the doubts were washed away. Washed away like a great tidal wave. Just gone.
Yeah, and this was 2 years into the PS1's life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You gotta remember what the original, what the premier library for PlayStation was when it first came out.
Tekken and Ridge Racer. And
yeah, it was Namco's arcade catalog.
Pretty much. Yeah. This game here...
Namco was basically the first party company for the first 2 years.
Yeah. And then this game came out, and it became the... Basically, this game sold probably more PlayStations than any other property that was on the system.
Yeah.
This was the game that people talked about in hushed whispers at school, at work. Mm-hmm. There were, you know, and it's, you know, everything about this game was just mind-blowing to so many people. You know, we can look back at it now and we can see, you know, that some of the issues, you know, the graphics.
Yeah, it was by no means a perfect game, but it did
so many things well that...
Yeah.
Well, not just specific things, but the things that give a game mainstream attention.
Yeah.
It did those things perfectly.
Yeah. It did, you know, it had all these amazing characters that have since become, you know...
Cultural icons.
Yeah, cultural icons. Almost became tropes in their own right. I mean, Cloud,
knows that, but... everyone knows Sephiroth.
Yeah. Look at Cloud Strife and look at basically every JRPG antagonist, protagonist that came afterwards. And you can see a little bit of Cloud in all of them.
Yeah, the year after Final Fantasy VII was a huge year for the PS1.
Yeah.
It was that, it was Gran Turismo the following spring, and then Metal Gear Solid the following fall.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Three huge games for that system.
Yeah.
And if you were one of those people with magazine subscriptions at the time, mm-hmm. and you were getting bombarded with those demo discs, you just knew that you were going to be forfeiting all of your money throughout that entire...
Yeah.
And then there's the story. I mean, we know that the translation for this game was imperfect.
Yeah.
And we know that the way they portrayed Barrett was a little on the racist side.
Kinda, sorta, yeah.
And, but we didn't care because the story was just so incredible.
Yeah.
Arguably,
and it also, I think, introduced people to the concept of the gut punch.
Mm-hmm. It had probably the single most infamous twist in all of gaming history, other than, you know, finding out that Samus was a girl.
Yeah.
And not until Metal Gear Solid 2 would there be another one that big.
Like that.
Hmm.
You know, midway through the game, one of the key characters, Aeris, is killed rather unceremoniously by Sephiroth.
Yeah.
And in a really early portion of the game, too.
Yeah. And imagine you can't get her back.
Nope.
She does not come back. She is permanently dead.
Yep.
And that was the biggest just kick in the nads to so many gamers back then.
Yeah, there's no way that would stay a secret for long if that was happening now, where that game released way earlier in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
This was what, like 95, 96, 97?
97.
Yeah, see, the first time I played through the game was like 2007. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know Aeris was going to die. So when she died, I was like, man, I built the fuck out of her. And the only reason why I played this game was because they gave me a review copy of Crisis Core and I wanted to understand it more. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, cool. All right.
Well, that sucked.
Yep.
Yep.
And then
you don't get any indication.
How did you avoid that for all those years?
I really don't know. I think it was mainly because I was moderating the Nintendo forum and I got a PS1 rather late.
So you were just kind of away from all that.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
wasn't looking for it.
Yeah.
Was one of those spoilers that finds you.
Yeah,
there was a statute of limitations on that one. It was maybe a year tops.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure that you had a bunch of people writing, these old walkthrough guides that you bought in stores. They still make them, obviously, because I'm sure the people working on the ones for Final Fantasy VII got to that part of the game and just didn't make any mention of it whatsoever, and just said, "Oh, we are going to hell."
Mm-hmm.
We're just walking people right into this and not saying shit.
Oh, yeah. And lest we forget also, Final Fantasy VII is the first time when Hideyuki Kikuchi, who had been the basically the mastermind of the whole of the Final Fantasy series up to that point, shared some major creative responsibilities with another person. That person was, of course, Tetsuya Nomura.
Yep.
All this character art that you're seeing in these pages, that's Nomura.
Yep.
That's his artwork to the world's everlasting.
I just have serious questions about his talent as a game developer.
Yeah. Well, people forget that, you know, he didn't just design the characters for Final Fantasy VII. He also worked on the scenario with Kikuchi.
Yeah.
You know, he was basically, you know, we see this, and then we see Final Fantasy VIII that came after this. And,
which was a very, very different looking game.
Yes, very much so. Lack of chibi characters, for one thing.
Yeah.
But also what really, I think, impressed a lot of people about Final Fantasy VII, it was the first sort of JRPG that people played, where there was a lot of not just sort of high fantasy elements, but also a lot of sci-fi elements as well.
That was Nomura as well.
Yeah. And you know, so you had all these spells and, you know, swords and stuff, and you also had things like helicopters and machine guns and trains.
You got Barrett with a Gatling gun attached to his wrist.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, that sort of became a thing unto itself. Because a lot of JRPGs would follow suit. Like, obviously, Final Fantasy VI kind of did it first a little bit, but it was a bit more of a steampunkish thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell in Final Fantasy VI, the technological aspect was meant to be a little bit more... What's the term? A bit more, like, bigger. Like, the technology was supposed to be a bit more rarer. Yeah. Whereas in Final Fantasy VII and the games that would come afterward, the technology was much more widespread. Yeah. And, I mean, this concept of taking these high fantasy elements and mixing them with these sort of modern day or futuristic elements sort of became a thing that a lot of JRPGs would do afterwards. In fact, in the world of pen and paper RPGs in Japan, there's actually a series of pen and paper RPGs called Al Shard that is specifically based around this concept of a high fantasy setting with all this modern technology.
Yeah, the whole beginning of that game is you're in this sort of cold open. We have to go on this mission. You don't really know what it's for. And you find out, oh, we're bombing this reactor.
Yep.
Yeah. That in and of itself.
Looking back on that, it's like, oh, in 4 years... terrorism would take on a whole other meaning for everybody in the U.S.
Yeah. And lest we also, and before we move on, lest we not forget the other major thing with Final Fantasy VII, the music.
Yeah.
Uematsu basically came into his own with this game.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd already made some incredible music beforehand, especially Final Fantasy VI. But the stuff he achieved on Final Fantasy VII is legendary. It gave us, you know, One Winged Angel, which is the...
Probably the most popular song in the whole series.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
For good or bad, whatever you want.
I wasn't going to say the best, but it was the most memorable.
It's the one everybody wants.
See... As far as quality goes, I always preferred The Birth of God, which is the one that came immediately before it, to One Winged Angel, just because that was more in line with what I was used to as Final Fantasy end boss music.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, One Winged Angel had a full choir and orchestra.
I really liked the boss battle music.
Oh yeah,
that was always a good go-to with the FF15 car when you can just go ahead and choose random music from the series. That was a go-to.
Oh, yeah. Hey, what's the dude that does the acapella stuff with himself
on YouTube? Smooth McGroove.
Yeah, he does that guy is awesome. One of that, and that's shows how awesome that is. Like all the battle music, the victory battle music is obviously also iconic, which is just.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, before we move on the last page of the cover feature for Final Fantasy VII, Scary Larry gave a sort of one-page retrospective on Final Fantasy II and III, which, of course, was...
Four and six.
And, obviously both of those games are awesome. So.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, so moving on.
One of the other monumental thing about FF7 was them just getting the series back to equals in terms of Japan and the rest of the world. Instead of having this whole, it's Final Fantasy II.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy III. It's like, where's Final Fantasy IV? Oh, wait, no, you already got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on from there, we've got an ad for Felony 1179.
I do not remember this game.
That was a PlayStation game. It was from...
I saw it on the shelves and never played it.
So. Yeah. So, I guess it didn't make much of an impression.
Nope.
And then next up, we got an ad for NASCAR 98.
This one was a thing. I did see it in stores.
Yeah.
Oh, this one.
Yeah, so.
Oh, and then, shit.
Here it is. Star Wars Masters of Terracotta.
Yeah.
Just the things wrong with this game.
Everything.
Let's count the ways. First of all, the idea that they could mess up a Star Wars fighting game to begin with.
Yeah.
That was an era where they were messing up a lot of Star Wars games.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's simpler, you think.
I mean, the worst part about this game was it was slow and buggy.
Yeah. Slow, buggy, the controls hardly worked. perspective didn't really work.
There was a time I'd thought about picking it up, but I found a demo disc that had it on. No, I'm good.
You're a dip of him real quick. So at this point, when they put it in the magazine, it was about halfway finished in development. And I know that the thing is, these screenshots that they give don't really explain very well what was wrong with this game. But like we said, it was because it was slow. And you would think, how can a fighting game be slow?
Oh, they had game motion capture. Basically,
well, the game basically played like they were fighting in zero gravity or underwater.
Yeah, like it was made by people that had never done that before. Made fighting games.
Yeah.
And the thing
this is one of the games that really put a stigma on fighting games that went straight to console while bypassing the arcades.
Yeah.
Because the arcades are the real stress test of a fighting game's viability.
Yeah.
And once you release on console, you can't change anything, you can't tweak, fix. It is what it is, because we didn't have, obviously patches are a thing now. That wasn't the case.
No, we didn't have internet.
You went through three or four arcade revisions before your game got to its prime form, and then you released it on console, and whenever a game didn't do that, I would say it was almost a 100% rate of that game not being very good as a result.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the list of things that were the first for this game's LucasArts first fighting game. It's also their first game on the PS1. So seems like a good combination there.
See, here's the thing. A Star Wars fighting game, if done right, would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
But they screwed it up so badly.
Yeah. I mean, we saw hints of that with Soul Calibur 4 and two Star Wars characters that were there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They didn't really fit into that game, but...
Showed you what it could be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I found out information about that Felony 1179 game. You know the Runabout series?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the first game.
Seriously.
That was how it was localized.
I'll be damned.
The second game would be on the Dreamcast. Super Runabout.
Okay. Yeah. So after that, we've got a 4-page ad for Treasures of the Deep for PlayStation. It was a... I remember seeing this game a lot in stores. I never touched it, but...
I've seen it in many a discount bin.
It was, basically, you went underwater treasure hunting.
Yeah.
You know, finding high-tech weaponry, submersibles.
Shooting sharks and other stuff.
Yeah, I don't take underwater very well, so...
This was part of a trend of underwater games. Some were just about exploration. Some were just about shooting shit.
And it was Namco, too, but so you'd think it would be pretty decent. But.
This is something that would have probably done better if it was an arcade game, I think.
Wasn't it?
I don't think it was. This one went straight to console. But could you, like, see this in sort of, like, one of Namco's sort of stylish, custom-made arcade cabinets?
Yeah, that was developed
especially back then.
Black Ops Entertainment. Black Dawn, Knockout Kings 2000, Warpath, Jurassic Park, 007, Tomorrow Never Dies.
They've been around.
It's not enough. They made like all the PS1 and N64 and PS2 licensed games.
Pretty much.
X-Files, Resist or Serve. Oh, they made Fugitive Hunter, Frontier. Okay, so that's why it's bad.
Yeah.
It's a game where you fight Osama bin Laden at the end in a fight.
Yeah, and the game was awful.
Yeah.
The game was notoriously awful. So moving on, we got the Overseas Prospects section where we get two
Saga Frontier
and Tobal 2.
Whatever that is.
Tobal 2 was a fighting game where Akira Toriyama did the character designs. In fact, in Tobal 2, you could... In Tobal 2, one of the secret characters was actually Toriyama himself. Well, the sort of a little robot thing that he drew to represent himself.
Looks like it's kind of a chocobo.
Yeah. And, of course, there's Saga Frontier, which is... was an
criminally underrated.
And pretty awesome sci-fi RPG. It was... It did not get the attention it deserved.
Yeah,
and that soundtrack too.
Oh yeah,
Kenji Ito.
Kenji Ito,
which is kind of surprising coming after FF7. You think people would say, "Well, that was pretty good. We should keep an eye on what these guys do next."
Yeah. And then next up, of course, that was the Saga Frontier thing, and then
next is NFL. Bettis.
Yeah, NFL game. 98.
This is really badly photoshopped.
Yes.
It is.
Jaggy mess of a picture onto a white background.
And they got a coupon for $10 off at Sears Funtronics. Speaking of something that doesn't exist anymore.
You guys see the and in between Saga Frontier and Tobol 2?
Yeah.
That's the Xbox font.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Not yet it wasn't.
It was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, then there is the actual Tobol 2 thing. And yeah, like I said, this is Toriyama's design. It was a Square property.
Yep.
And, you know, we actually got the first Tobol over here.
And it sold like crazy because it had the Final Fantasy VII demo in it.
Yep.
Yep.
And then for some reason, they kept the second game away from here.
Yeah.
And it dropped off the earth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is
Dream Factory.
It was a fighting game / RPG.
Yep.
Yeah.
It actually had a dungeon mode where
they would go on to make Air Guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bouncer.
Yep.
Kakuto Chojin.
Bouncer.
Yeah. That was not good.
Toshinden on the Wii.
That was not good either.
They should have just gone. Realized what a good thing they had with Air Guys and built from that.
The company's chairman, Seiichi Ishii, worked on Virtual Fighter and Tekken, early designer and director for those games.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Didn't go too well for him later on.
Well, no. Well, that's what happens when you strip down the complexity of 3D fighting games by categorizing your high, mid, and low attacks to specific buttons.
Yeah. And, of course, then next we got a 3-page ad for Lost World Jurassic Park.
Oh, thanks.
Don't play that game.
Yeah, it was... And then we got a 2-page ad for Herc's Adventures. This was not related to the Disney film.
No.
Yeah.
It just so happened to come out right around the same time.
It's another LucasArts game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was okay. And then we've got for sneak previews. Talk about wasted potential.
This game could have been great if they had not insisted on using fighting game mechanics for its everything, really.
It had a button
to
turn.
That is the kiss of death.
Yeah.
It had platforming.
And when I say you had a button to turn, I don't mean like the D-pad. No. If you tried to turn around with a D-pad, you would just back up.
Yeah.
You had to press a separate button completely away from the D-pad.
Whoopsie.
Or the analog stick, for that matter.
Yeah, it was an FMV game, pretty much. Yeah.
Or
all the good and bad that brought.
Yeah. And, yes, it was a lot of bad. This also basically proved that John Tobias should not be left to his own devices when it comes to making a game.
Yeah.
If
they'd made it more of a straight-up, honest platformer, it could have been really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it wasn't, and, you know, because if this game had turned out good, there could have been a whole sub-series.
Yep.
No pun intended.
And the entire Mortal Kombat continuity could be that much more fleshed out as a result of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah. And I'll base your spinoff game around Quan Chi, and he sets off the story.
Yeah. And also, have you guys ever watched the cutscenes for this game on YouTube?
I've seen Giant Bomb cutscenes. I've played it.
Yeah, I've seen Giant Bomb play it.
It is
special stuff.
Humorous.
It's what you want out of FMV.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat FMV.
Yeah. All right.
Was Special Forces too, which didn't come out. Came out a little bit after that, which was even worse.
Yeah, it was actually that we thought this game was bad. Special Forces was a shit show.
Yeah.
All right. And I think we'll do just a couple more of these, and then we'll wrap up.
All right.
So then we have
fun Duke fact. Nukem. I actually. Go ahead with Duke Nukem.
Yeah, we got Duke Nukem 64 up next.
Had this too.
Yeah. this is back when Duke Nukem was still, you know, the shit. you know, this is. It's also, you know, back when 3D Realms could still show that they could make a game.
Yeah. And I just want to point out, Duke Nukem Forever was already in development at this point.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. I will point out that the Duke Nukem 64 was actually a pretty solid game.
Yes.
Yes, it was. Mm. I mean, the Duke Nukem 3D itself was just pretty – was probably the – when Duke Nukem 3D came out, it was the top of the line for first-person shooters. Yep. You know, obviously Half-Life would come afterwards, but as far as like having that level of interactivity with the world, also it just fit in with the 90s attitude.
Yeah.
I mean, it was dumb, it was sexist, it was, well, it was everything Duke Nukem Forever would prove to be.
Yeah.
It's all based on the action movies of the 80s.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which of course, for Christmas?
Of course, Shadow Warrior also came out around this time too.
Yes. Same engine and everything.
And that one also took all the dumb sexism with racism.
Yeah, because it starred a protagonist called Lo Wang
with a very bad fake Asian accent.
Yep.
Which somehow managed to come back and be really good.
Yeah.
All right.
Figure.
All right.
Yeah, so fun fact with this spread, I actually rented these two games back to back. And after that, I didn't ever rent a game for a while because Duke Nukem 64 gave me crazy motion sickness.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was for a lot of people when FPS has started making their way to the consoles.
Yeah.
Yeah, people had problems with the motion sickness. I think it was just for a lot of folk. The console gamers just in general weren't quite used to first-person gameplay of that magnitude yet.
Was it on these podcasts recently that I talked about my mom's Doom binge?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
And she got motion sickness, we know.
Well, yeah, she pulled an all-nighter, and I woke up, and she was... Yeah.
Blah.
Pretty much.
And, oh, man.
And then the next day, she was right back at it, so I...
Yeah.
So you want to hear what they removed from this version? Sure. In-game music was removed. And due to the port's censorship, many items were renamed to avoid drug and sex references.
Yeah.
New lines of dialogue were recorded specifically for this version to remove profanity.
Yep. Mm.
But they added some of the level stuff from Atomic Edition.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And by and large, nobody cared about the censorship because fucking 4-play deathmatch.
Yep.
Yeah. That's all played.
So up next, we've got Nuclear Strike for the PlayStation.
The Strike series. I think the last of the Strike series, wasn't it?
Yep. And this was a strategy game, right?
No.
It was kind of a top-down isometric blue.
Isometric shooters. One of those games. I gotcha.
As in Desert Strike, Jungle Strike.
I gotcha.
Strike.
I remember those now. But, apparently North Korea was involved in the plot, apparently.
Yep.
As you can see, that statue of Kim Il-sung down there at the bottom.
Low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And this was 1997, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then we've got All right, we'll do this one and the next one, and then we'll stop. We got Nightmare Creatures for PlayStation.
Yes.
We talked about this one last time. This game, it was a survival horror slash an adventure game, and it was so much fun.
It wasn't subtle. It was a little bit on the clunky side, but...
It was drenched in blood.
Yeah.
Kicking
zombies' heads off.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Did you guys ever play the sequel?
No.
See, the sequel was neat because it was basically some crazy dude in an asylum with bandages wrapped around his head killing people with a hatchet.
Okay. I should probably play this.
Yeah. But yeah, I just played that. And then finally, we'll leave off on WWF 98.
This one...
This was a claim still,
this,
right?
This one went on to be Attitude, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because no game was released under this name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were no years.
Yeah.
You can tell by the, you know, the sort of the roster they got showing here. We got Shawn Michaels.
And the camera being all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shawn,
the claim really didn't know what it wanted to do.
Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, British Bulldog, Mankind. We, of course, all know who that is.
Yep.
The Undertaker, Triple H, or as he was known back then, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Ahmed Johnson, Farouk. Of course, that was the head of the Nation of Domination, which was the, honestly, kind of sort of racist take-up of the Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where The Rock got his start.
And Rocky Maivia, which was...
Yeah, it was Rocky Maivia first.
That was The Rock. Gold Dust. And, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game was made by Iguana West.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hmm.
All right, well... We're going to leave it off there, and we'll pick it up next episode. I do believe we've had a show.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. All right, so I'd like to remind our listeners, if you wish to send us in some mail or ask us some questions, have something you want us to read on the air, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Also, you can... find our podcast on top of iTunes. We've also got Google Play, RSS. Basically, find a format and enter our name into the search bar, and there's a pretty good chance we're on there.
Yeah.
And any mobile app will get all of that stuff.
So you can enjoy us on the go.
Yep.
And with that, I do believe we're going to wrap it up for tonight. So... I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Analfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logie, Teresa Sammons, and Derek Repetorio, I'd just like to say good night. Get some sleep out there. Mass Effect is a shit, and I don't care who doesn't say so. So...